And now, from beyond our dimension, this is the Jeff Mara Podcast. Here's Jeff.
My guest is Dr. Margot McKinnon, Oxford graduate who has had two near-death experiences, which we are going to talk about and more. Dr. McKinnon, thank you for joining me today and welcome.
Hi, Jeff. Such a pleasure to meet you today and have a really great conversation.
Well, Dr. McKinnon, can we start with your NDEs first and then we'll go from there?
Sure. I would say my first NDE was when I was 18 years old and I was at university and I got really sick. I had strep throat and they put me in the basement, this infirmary in the basement of our dormitory. And I had this nurse who was supposed to be looking after me and my fever was just off the chart. And she said, I'm supposed to sit with you here all night. But you know, this really hot guy asked me out. It's Friday night. And I told him, no, I can't go because, well, I have to look after you. And I thought, well, I can relate to that, 18 years old. And I said, well, just go on your date. It's okay. I'll be fine. Right. But meanwhile, my throat's swollen out here and I can hardly talk. But anyway, off she was delighted, Jeff. And off she went. But she said, I'll call you at 9 o'clock. So the phone's right here. I'll call you. I'll check in. Everything's good. And I said, okay. And then off she went. And then I, fell asleep. And my spirit came out and it was heading to the most beautiful orange light. And then I thought, oh no, I need to say goodbye to my roommate before I go off to the other side. And I went up and I went up the staircase and I was hovering on the ceiling and I looked down and I saw all the girls in my dormitory and they had ball gowns on and they were waiting at the front door. And I was hovering on the ceiling and this one girl looked up at me like, what am I seeing up there? And I did a little somersault in the air and I said, oh, you've seen your first ghost. And then I went up the four flights and I burst the door open and my roommate wasn't there. And so I said, well, sorry, I came to say goodbye, but I've got to go. Oof, like this. It was so wonderful. And then I came to with the nurse coming into my room and she was shaking me like, and she said, I called you like, I don't know how many times she said now, like 30 times and you didn't pick up. I thought you were dead. And I said, I think I was dead. Like, were the girls going somewhere tonight? And she said, well, they were going to the military ball. Were they all at the front door? Yeah, they were all waiting for taxis. And I said, oh, I saw them. And she said, you can't even get out of bed. I said, no, I was on the ceiling and this one girl looked up, which I was always trying to find that girl again, but I never could find her just to see what she saw from her side. And so at the end of it, I just thought for me, it was just another spiritual experience because I've had spiritual experience most of my life. So I wouldn't say this one was a profound one that really changed my life. It was more of a, oh, that was cool. And some people might argue that it's an out-of-body experience. It wasn't technically a near-death. But for me, my spirit was out. It was looking around. So I'm more interested about the capability of the spirit. Because if a spirit can be a ghost, let's say, when I was on the ceiling and looking down saying, you've seen your first ghost, it's not like that part of yourself. Just materializes when you die. It's there the whole time. So what I've focused on in my life and what I've been really challenging myself is, what is our spirit? What are its capabilities? How can I make mine really strong? What kind of power does it actually have? Like, what can it do? So I'm fascinated by that. Because when your body drops, there's your spirit. Well, your spirit's there the whole time. What's it doing? It's looking out your eyes. It's looking out onto the world. How's it doing? Have you created the life your spirit came here to live? These are questions that I find quite fascinating. Now, my second one was when I was about 37. And I was doing an Indigenous ceremony because I was doing a lot of ceremony with our Indigenous people up here in Canada. And I don't really like talking about all the details of it because I don't want my Indigenous friends to think I'm, you know, telling secrets out of turn or whatever, what happens. But it's a fasting ceremony. So it's not peyote. It's not any kind of chemically induced anything. It's a fasting ceremony. You're not allowed to eat for 4 days. No food, no water, 4 days. And it's a community kind of ceremony. And it was about the third day. I was a bit hungry, Jeff. And you have to dance like for 4 days. So it's quite an exhausting, and you really have to rise above the body. You have to rise above the mind that tells you you want to quit or eat or have a glass of water. You have to rise above that. And if you're going to last the whole 4 days, you have to be able to rise up into your spirit dimension. So I was on day three. And while I was in that ceremony, it was so hot. It was like 100 degrees. And at one point, I just went vroom, like this and fell back like this. And the ceremony is, no one's really going to help you. That's part of the ceremony. Can you survive? So my spirit went vroom, like this, but my spirit went up, 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 up like this. And I remember, and my mom had just passed like the year before. And I went up. And I was going into the most beautiful, beautiful, unconditional love like you can ever experience. And I was looking at it. And I thought, I have to open my eyes really big to see it. And for some reason, I thought if I open my eyes really big, my pupils would get big and I would be able to see more of this unconditional love. And then I opened my mouth really big to get my eyes bigger. So I was like, And this like white light, unconditional love, it just went infused into my body as I was like, and I could see other spirits going up like that too. And then my mom came down because she had passed earlier. My mom came down. My mom had one of those smiles that was like this, and her smile came down like that. And she said, "You can't come up any farther than this." And I had three little kids, Jeff, like they were little. So I had to come back down. I was a mom. She said, "You can't come down." And a lot of near-death experiencers have that same experience where they want to go up, but they come back down. So my spirit came boom, right back into my body. And I remember coming back like this. And I remember looking around like this, thinking, well, where am I? I didn't realize like I had a body. I was looking at my hands and like looking around that nobody else was actually concerned. They were all still doing their ceremony. I sort of had to get up. And what that experience taught me, because I like to look at spiritual experience, and so many of your audience, Jeff, they're having spiritual experience, whether they hear a voice or they see something or they have a premonition or they just have that sense of, I know there's something more to this world. And that's the audience I like to speak to, because we have these spiritual experiences and people want to know, what was it? And when I came back down into my body, this was my experience. And I have to say, I came back down and I thought, oh, you know, there's so much unconditional love over there. And it seems so harsh and abrasive down here. But it was in that moment I thought, well, why don't I make my life about unconditional love? Why can't we have that down here? Why can't we create this kind of sense of peacefulness and unconditional love and joy? And at the time, I was a high school English teacher. And I thought, well, I can do it in my classroom. I can create a space in there that's welcoming to students, where they feel really connected, that this is learning is a joyful experience, and that they felt really loved in the classroom. And I thought, in my classroom, I can create that. In my own family with my children, I can create that. But you know what? Jeff, I actually had this feeling like, you know, so beautiful over here. And you just can't seem to create it down here. But in that moment, I also realized that I spent so much time having spiritual experience and kind of living in a spiritual way. I thought, yeah, I think I just had a near-death experience. But when I'm down here, I'm actually having a near-life experience. And when I first started talking about my near-death experiences, I remember I used to make a mistake and I'd say, well, during my near-life experience. And then I'd go, oh, no, I mean my near-death. But there was a truth in that. I wasn't living my life really, really fully as a human being. I was having like a near-life experience. I wasn't pushing myself to really explore all parts of being human. Does that resonate with you?
It does. I think you've had two amazing experiences. And whether somebody wants to classify them as an NDE or not, to me, is irrelevant. I think that they're NDEs. After either one of these experiences, did you happen to get any new gifts that could be considered psychic that you didn't have prior?
Well, I was always a little kid who had experiences. Like I had a voice that came in when I was 4 years old. I was just playing in my living room with my little doll, Michael, and I heard this voice say, you are to be a teacher. And I said, okay, I will be a teacher. Not that I really knew what one was. I didn't even go to school then at 4 years old. But I said to this voice, yes, I'll be a teacher. And that voice doesn't come in that powerfully all the time in my life. What I've been trying to do in my life is say, what are the conditions I create for that voice to come in and give me direction about my purpose and what I'm supposed to be doing with it? And I've explored that because I was 4 years old when that happened. After my NDE, the second one, the answer to your question is yes. I was doing my master's degree and because I was a high school teacher and they wanted me to become a principal. And so I said, okay, I'm pretty much a yes person. Oh, Marco, why don't you try this? Okay, I'll do that. And I said, okay, I'll do my master's degree. And I had to take 10 courses and I also had to write a thesis. I took all the courses and my courses were all having to do with teacher professional learning and how to create organizational culture for learning to happen. And I took one course, the very last one was for myself. And it was called Philosophy of Mind. And the first homework assignment was, how are the body, mind, spirit related? And I thought, oh, how great. This is really exciting. This is totally up my street. I'm going to go home. I'm going to ask the universe, ask that voice, what's the answer? I came home and I have a system. Like when you think about how do I get that voice to come in for me, I had to have my house really, I had to come home and wash my floors. I had hardwood floors to have nice, shiny floors, uncluttered space where it's nice, clean, and tidy. And I got on my couch and I had my, I like these yellow pads of paper to write my things down on. Got out my yellow pad of paper, lit a candle. And I said, so how are the body, mind, spirit related? I wasn't expecting the answer I got. I thought I would just get some simple answer. But the voice came in, that same one from when I was 4 years old. Only this time, for the first time in my life, it actually came in not just as a voice, but as this massive figure in my living room. And it was really excited to answer the question. And I said, how are the body, mind, spirit related? And it said, I'm going to say it backwards, how it said it, and then I'll say it the other way around, because some people need to be hear it this way. So it said, we have five dimensions of self. We have a body. We have a mind. We have a spirit, we have a soul, and we have oneness. And at first I was sitting there going, spirit and soul, I thought they were the same thing. What's the difference? Your spirit is the part of you that came from unconditional love, where I went up in my NDE, that beautiful white space of unconditional love. Your spirit came from there. It will go back there. And your spirit is the part of you that is still connected to that unconditional love. It's your ghost. It's your eternal self. It's your real self. It's your real self. And your soul is your purpose, your meaning, your sense of meaning and purpose. I thought, okay, oneness. So if we go back to the beginning, your body is this. This is what mine looks like. I could be having a better hair day, I'll admit, Jeff. Your body is this. Your mind is your logical, rational self that knows how to navigate. It can read a map, do your taxes, figure out a mortgage payment, a to-do list, all that systematize things for you. That's your mind part of yourself. Your spirit, as I said, came from unconditional love. It will go back there. Your soul is your purpose. And oneness is your connection to God, creator, universe. But it's also your connection to all time, place, beings. So it's your sense of connection and belonging. But here was the thing that changed for me. It said, you're born dominant in one of your dimensions and you grow the others over time. So a body dominant person. When their spirit came into being human, they love the physical, tangible parts of life. Food, sports, especially those kind of rugby, football, soccer kind of sports where you're really body-ish. They like interior design and making things look beautiful, a beautiful table setting. I'm not a body dominant person, and I've come to enjoy that part of life. I had to grow that part, in other words. But body dominant people are really, really good at that dimension of life. Mind dominant people, they're very good at the logical, rational systems part of life. They like to be the boss of an organization, the manager, the CEO. They like to make sure that all the systems are working. They might be the head of hospitals or big organizations like school systems. So that's a mind-dominant person. I'm also not one of those. A spirit-dominant person is one that probably many of your viewers, your guests here probably will resonate with, Jeff. A spirit-dominant person values unconditional love and peacefulness more. And when their spirit came in, it was kind of a struggle to take on the human form. And I get worried as an educator, I get worried about testing kids too early in life, because body-dominant kids tend to walk early. Mind-dominant kids tend to talk early. And spirit-dominant kids, it's hard for them to just kind of get into their body, and it's hard for them, like their food tastes, you know, it's just too powerful for them as little babies. The sounds of everything, the smells of everything, they get rashes, their clothes are itchy, owie, and it's hard for them to adapt to being human spirit-dominant kids. I wish, Jeff, I had known this when my kids were small, because I would have parented them accordingly. Do you have kids?
I have two, and I wish the same. At what age do you think that they start developing the others?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because I don't actually know. I think we're all so different in our own growth, and I think it's... For spirit dominance people, it's mainly when you grow, when you get some awareness around what's happening. And that's why I want to get out there and talk to people about this. Spirit dominance, you're going to have like small children, it's harder for them You know, they don't want to join the sports teams. They don't want to play rugby. Gym class, when they have to go to, I always remember having this one student. He was just the last one packing up all of his stuff. And he was clearly a spirit dominant, very ethereal boy. And I said, where do you have to go next? Gym class. I could just tell it was going to be painful. And I said, what module are you on? Rugby. And it was just like, he was just not, rugby was not his thing, but possibly long distance running where he could just be in nature, like cross country where he's kind of by himself and running by the river. And but to have to play in this kind of rugged, combative sport, because don't forget, spirit dominant people value unconditional love, peacefulness. So to have to stick them in rugby, where if you did that on the street, you would get arrested tackling somebody or taking something, their ball away. So spirit dominant people, if they get the awareness right now, they can start developing their other dimensions. Because I'm hoping some of your viewers today are going, I think that's me. Because spirit dominant people, their spirit values that, and their spirit's looking out their eyes and saying, this is a kind of an abrasive, harsh and abrasive place to live. It's too mind dominant for me. And we can find people in jobs where it's so mind dominant, it's crushing their spirit.
Are we coming in this way? And really what I should be asking is, are we choosing this dominance pre-birth?
I'm not sure, Jeff, to be honest. That's a good question. So I'm going to have to pose that to the universe now and see if I can get some answers about that. I feel when I get, let's move over to soul dominant, because that might help answer it. Soul dominant people, they came here with a purpose in life. And that's all they want to do. Don't ask them to do a job that's not on their purpose. They can, and they don't have to make money at it. They just have to stick with that soul purpose. And I got a real beautiful email from this woman talking about her brother who was an artist. And she said, I feel so terrible because, you know, he could be doing anything, but he's just so focused on this art. And he lives in a small little place, a little apartment, and he just wants to paint all day and he doesn't care about selling his paintings. And I said, is it bothering him? Well, no, he seems quite happy. Well, then just let him do. They can look quite eccentric because they just want to focus on their soul purpose. And I'm a soul, like I would call myself a spirit dominant because my spirit looks out at a world that seems harsh and abrasive. And I'm trying to do something about it now, Jeff, by the way. But a soul dominant, I'm also a soul person. And I think I'm only soul dominant because I was told at 4 years old, you are to be a teacher. And I stayed true to that.
I want to stop you for 1 second because I let this go by too long. And I want to backtrack to that voice.
Yes.
Who do you think that voice is?
It's very deep. It feels male. Mm-hmm. And I never really concerned myself with who the voice was. Is it my guardian? Is it my angel? Is it God? My big concern is it telling me the truth? Am I supposed to listen to that? However, in saying that, I was in Canterbury doing a presentation on this model, this dominance theory for, it was a spirituality and children conference. And I met this minister from the Canterbury Church. And we were talking about, he came to my session, we were talking about it. And he said, Marco, why do you not think that that voice is God? And I said, well, because I'm little Margo McKinnon from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. How could an ordinary person like me hear God talking? And he said, the way you talk about it, it's how God talks. Really. And sometimes You know, I was explaining this to somebody this week. Sometimes when I hear that voice, it's that deep voice. And sometimes some of you may just feel knowledge coming into you like this. And you go, oh. And a complete insight comes to you like a little, oh, thank you. So I don't know. I'm beginning to think that it might be God. And when I think about it, I think back to my son. He's my youngest. When he was 3 and I was tucking him into bed, and he said, you know, Mom, before I was born, God told me I had to come down and be a human. I said, really? Well, what did you say? And he said, well, I told him I didn't want to come. Why not? Because it's not very nice down here, Mom. And it's just so nice over there. And I didn't want to come. And I said, did you tell God that? I did. And what did, you know, I went through all those questions of, is it a man or a woman? What does God look like? All those things, right? And he said, God is like white and doesn't really have a shape, but I'm saying he. And can you imagine the insight out of a little 3-year-old? And he said, God told me I had to come down. And I said, well, can you show me my mother? And he took a picture of you, like out of a photo album, and he showed me your picture. And I said, oh, she looks mean. And I don't want to come down and be her son. I'm listening, right? And I'm, oh, okay. And then what happened? And he said, well, when God tells you you have to do something, you have to do it, Mom. And I got inside your body. And then I was born and I looked at your face and I thought, oh, you're beautiful. And I'm glad you're my mom. So that confirmed, because my near-death experience was kind of around that time. It confirmed what I felt about this unconditional love and it being not so nice down here, and that some babies don't want to be born into this world. And my son was actually born dead because he had the cord wrapped around his neck and he was feet first, and he was black and blue, and I could hear them with him over there going, come on, baby, breathe. Come on, baby, breathe. And they were bringing him back. So I think that conversation happened when he was in that in-between of deciding. And he said, when God tells you to do something, you have to do it. And with that voice, when I was 4 years old, it told me to be a teacher. And so I was. And I listen to that voice. When it comes in, I do what it says. But I've tested that voice to make sure that it's, you know, trustworthy. And I've tested it over my lifetime to see what that voice is. I think that's why I keep getting bigger and bigger spiritual experience, because I listen. It's like anybody else. If you're talking to somebody and they're not listening to you, you'll stop talking.
Exactly.
I listen. And so it keeps talking.
If we go back to dominance, what is the value of discovering your dominance? And what I mean by that is, what do you do with that information? Do you say, oh, I'm dominant in this, I better pick up the slack on the others, or where do you go with that?
That's such a good question. And I actually didn't finish because I left off at soul. Mm-hmm. And let's finish off oneness. And oneness is connection and belonging. So there are some people who are oneness dominant, where they value connection and belonging. So to move along to your question, when I first came up with this model, which was back in 2002, that's like more than 20 years ago now, when I came up with this, and then I wrote this one, which is the kind of, what do you do with it, to answer your question. But I wrote this one, can you see the title? The Exquisiteness of Being Human. Mm-hmm. I only have 10 copies left. But look at all my sticky notes, because I have to go back and refer to it myself, because I'm going, oh man. But back in the day when I wrote that, I was so spirit dominant, Jeff, that, you know, I saw this world as harsh and abrasive. And as much as I was trying to bring unconditional love into my classroom, I sometimes just had that feeling of, I just want to go home now. It's too hard down here. And I remember as a child, I used to lie on my bed going, talking to the spirit dimension, saying, how long do I have to stay here? Like, how long do I have to do this? Breathe, move my body around. And I'm 5'10". So I had a big body. I always knew that my spirit was carrying around this body. And when I wrote this book, I was pining to go home. And I was just saying, am I done yet? Can I go home now? It felt like I was being forced to go to one of those parties that you just, your spirit just doesn't want to go. And I just wanted to go home now. However, because I had three kids, which are my big motivators, I thought, it's time for me to stop being a stranger in my life, to stop just floating along in the spiritual dimension, but to instead find the exquisiteness of my life. I needed to be a better human and to stop having regular near-life experiences. Because I live so much in the spirit dimension. What does that mean, living in the spirit dimension? When your body's here, but your spirit is roaming around in other places, you may have and houses that you like to live in that are in your spirit world. You might have other people in there. You might be doing other things. You might have another job in there. And your spirit sense spends so much time roaming around in the spirit dimension that your body here on the human world isn't really accomplishing that much. It's having a near-life experience. And I realized I was doing that. I had to explore my other dimensions. And in this book, Jeff, when the universe told me about oneness, I didn't even really understand what that was in the original vision. I didn't understand what it was. Oneness, okay, connection. Like, I had so little connection and belonging to this world that I didn't really, like, I think that chapter is a page and a half long. I didn't really know. Over time, I thought, you know what? I need to start exploring my other dimensions. And I started with my weakest ones. I was very strong here, but I was weak here, and I was weak here. So my mind was fine. I mean, I have university degrees. I went off and I got my PhD from Oxford. I can be in a mind world. I can function at a high level in a mind world. Do I want to live? Do I want to work in a mind dominant job? No, I don't. I don't want to do that. I want to do what I'm doing now. I worked on this one because my body was low. My nutrition was low. My exercise was low. I used to wear my hair in a ponytail all the time and wear all black clothes. I didn't wear makeup. I preferred to be kind of invisible because I was so spirit. And I thought, you know what, maybe, so do you see, I put on a nice brighter color today. When I discovered this, I got my, look at my haircut there. I went in there and I said, could you cut my hair so I can't get it in a ponytail? And so that, those are my ways. I mean, all the viewers can do whatever way they want, right? Going into the body. I exercise every day. I run 4 miles every day and I do 4 miles the next day of my weights, 2 7-pounders. And then I also decided because my oneness was low that I was going to develop that. I decided I was going to make 5 really great friends per year. I was going to have a party every year to say to my friends how much I loved them, how much they meant to me, how much I cared about them. And in the first time I had my party, I probably had about 7 people there. And by the time I left for Oxford and I was having this I think I had 80 people on my list to invite, and all 80 came. I thought maybe half would come, and they're going, Margo, you need a bigger house because we can't even fit in your house. And I said, well, I didn't think everybody was going to come. Of course we're coming to your party. I grew my social circle. I grew my skill set for connection and belonging. And now in schools, I do sessions for teachers on the loneliness epidemic, because people are getting lonely. They're sitting, you know, especially after COVID and technology and social media, there is a big loneliness epidemic. And I say, well, loneliness is a sign that your oneness dimension is low, your skill set. These are all skill sets. So your skill set is low in the connection and belonging. And then I teach them how to get the students to develop that skill set.
How do you get your kids to do skill sets that they don't want to do?
Well, I didn't force anything. My big thing is create an environment that is so welcoming and create a beautiful experience. A lot of people don't want to go into work right now because it's too mind dominant. How about create a beautiful work experience for people? Recognize that everybody that works for you and with you are having a human experience. How do you create a beautiful experience for everybody? And everybody's going to want to show up. And at the same time, occasionally my kids had to be grounded. Okay. And so my oldest, he had his first grounding. And I said, okay, you're grounded for 2 weeks. And do you know what a grounding at my house looked like? If he had gone off the rails, I knew it's because he didn't love his life. That's the only reason why that he was going off the rails, skipping school or, you know, whatever else. And so I remember sitting him down one day and I said, well, you know, you're grounded. Okay. And I said, can you it's quite clear to me that you're not loving your life. Because if you loved your life, you wouldn't be doing these things. I said, if your life were exactly the life your spirit wanted to live, what would that look like? And I gave him, you know, I had my yellow pad of paper, and he started telling me, and it was like beautiful things, all doable, right? I'd love to kayak. I need to be in nature more often. And he had this beautiful, how the life his spirit wanted to live. And I said, well, you know, my number one job as your mom is to help you create the life your spirit wants to live. But right now you've gone off the rails. You have to come straight home from school. No computers, no television. We're talking, we're reading, we're eating high vibration, beautiful foods. I'm going to come home from school every day. We're going to go for a run by the river. And we're going to talk. And on the weekends, we're going to go up to the mountains. And you're going to have your time in the mountains and in the fresh air and in nature, just what your spirit needs. I made his grounding a beautiful experience. A lot of parents think that they need to punish their kids more. And I said, well, you know, don't do that, because they're already struggling. That's why they're going down that path. They're already struggling. What you want to do is ground their spirit, the life they want to live, who they really are. Because then we can sit down, have those conversations about, is that behavior that you're doing, is that who you really are? Who are you really? And without television and computers and all of that, we had a lot of time to just sit and talk about all of that. He's 35 now today, and he's living exactly the life that he described to me. He has all of that. He lives in the Maritimes of Canada. He's got a little log house on 2 acres. He has his peace and quiet. He's got a fantastic job. He's a teacher as well, but he teaches in the military. And he has that whole package, and he knows every time he feels that he's going into a dip, he just says, okay, let's get this back out again. I need to eat high vibration food. I need to get back to running. I'm going off the rails. Okay, I need to go in and see if I can boost my career. And he usually knows that when he needs to go off the rails, he said, no, now I know I need to go up a notch. It's not do less, do more. Go up a notch, create the life my spirit wants to live, get back to my meaning and purpose in life, because he's a very purpose-driven person. He's a phenomenal human being. And I need to get back to my connection and belonging. So it's really, what do you do? How do you use it? It's a real wellness. And I say to people, if you happen to be a spirit dominant, go to your weakest dimension and start there.
I think a lot of people will agree that it's tough here. There's a lot of suffering here. Is it because we're out of balance with our dominance?
I think we are. And I think it's because we've allowed a mind dominant structure to dominate our society. And mind dominant people, I have in my book, I have What You Look Like When You're Really Healthy, which I always want to get everybody back to being healthy, because my main purpose in life is to help people create the life their spirit wants to live. But mind dominant, and I don't want to mind dominant people who are watching to feel that I'm beating up on them. My dad is mind dominant, but he's developed all of his dimensions. And he said to me when I was growing up, whatever career you pick, make sure it's not just about money. Make sure you're serving your community and your country. And I really took that on board. He's a phenomenal person, and he just explores all of his dimensions. He's a great mentor to me. But it's when you have mind-dominant people who say, oh, that's just woo-woo over here. All those visions, intuition. Then we have a problem. And because then you marginalize out different ways of knowing. And I think that we've allowed a mind dominant structure, and it's burning people out. And I have in my book also, what do these dominance profiles look like when they're stressed? So a body dominant person, if their spirit is in a body and that's their primary one, then as they grow older, that whole plastic surgery and having to fix the body and make it perfect and all of that, it's just designed to prey on like an out of balance, a stressed out body dominance person. And then a mind dominant, when they create all the structures and the systems, but when that structure and system starts breaking down, they want to micromanage everybody back into that system. And they might even start objectifying people. And here's an example. My friend is mind dominant, and we were driving, and she said, oh, look at that idiot just pulled out over there. Look at that idiot over there. Look at that idiot. And finally she turned to me and she said, I bet you think I'm kind of stressed. And I'm sitting there, kind of do, because not everybody's an idiot out here. But sometimes mind-dominant people, they have a system in their mind. This is how it's done. It's quite clear and obvious. And you're an idiot if you can't see it. And what I like about my mind-dominant people is they rein themselves in. And they'll say, uh-oh, I'm stressed out, Margo. They'll make an appointment. I'm stressed out. I'm objectifying people. I heard myself calling somebody an idiot today or even thinking about it. And it's good for them to say, just take a breath. Take a breath. Go over here and try connection and belonging over here. See if you can do the opposite.
Earlier, you mentioned that even you were ready to go home.
Mm-hmm.
Has that feeling dissipated now after putting this to work?
You know what? I'm so glad you asked, because I think my family used to get kind of worried. We'd go on a hike or something and I'd just crumple into the grass and just say, I just don't find anything fun. I just want to go home. And it was when I made that decision. And anybody out there, if you say, okay, I am ready now to find the exquisiteness of my life. So the answer is, I have to live till I'm 150 now, Jeff, because I have so much to do. Because I'm writing, my next book is on spirit-dominant leadership. Well, if we have mind-dominant leadership out there right now, and people are getting burned out, they're retiring early, what would spirit-dominant leadership look like? If you put unconditional love, peacefulness, the idea, let's create an experience for people to live in. And that was one of the things I did in my classroom as a teacher. I would say, I want my students to arrive every day and walk through that door and say, I feel completely myself in this space. I feel valued. I feel loved. Because I used to tell them I love them. Like, especially when they were writing a test, I'd look out, I just love all of you. And I feel bad I have to give you a test today. You know, so... And my marking was very lovingly put together. And just because they knew that they were growing more and more into themselves. And I said, writing is for you to learn how to have a voice, to stand up for yourself, to not be invisible. You want to create the life your spirit wants to live. So I created that experience in my classroom. But what if we did that out there in the world, every single boss, manager, entrepreneur, and they thought about it, how can we create an experience and put unconditional love, peacefulness, joy first? And I, because my students, they did really, really well on those state exams, like their marks. And my colleagues would say, how do you get those kids who failed over and over to arrive first thing in the morning and sit there working? Well, because I create an environment for them. The kettle's going, there's herbal tea that they can pour for themselves as they go to their desk. They knew I deeply, deeply cared about them. And what if we had that in the workplace, Jeff? So that people feel like I belong here. And so that's what I'm trying to do. Let's see what happens. So I'm running a big experiment right now. I'm not going to tell you all about it, but it's going to be the topic of my third book. I'm running an experiment right now where I've taken a leadership position and I'm documenting what happens when you put unconditional love, peacefulness, the experience that people all have a purpose and a meaning here, and we build connection and belonging. When we put that first, what happens?
Now, you also have a YouTube channel, and I was checking it out, and you have a video on there about the value of ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about that?
I put that up a long time ago, and I'm getting requests to make my own podcasts, and we talked about this before we got going, and one of them was the value of ritual. And I have over here, which I'm not going to show you, but I have a prayer table in my living room, and I have a picture of my mom who passed away. I have my children, and I have very special things on that table. And every morning I wake up, I light a candle. Then I go over there and I light another candle and I do a white light meditation every morning. And what that means is when I went up into that white light of unconditional love, our spirit has the ability to go up into that white light. So every morning I go up into that white light and I stay up there and I talk to the universe, God, creator, that voice. And I talk about, you know, life. What do you want me to do today? Bring me people that need you to talk through me to hear them. And I do that every morning, 2.5 hours in the morning. And then I do another hour before bed, just debriefing my day. And I think just having that regularity kind of a ritual of, these are the important people in my life. I put all my clients in my white light meditations too, and I bring them up. And what's so lovely is they're feeling it now. They feel me bringing them up into this white light meditation. I think it's really, really important, these meditations. And you know what, Jeff? I didn't do them prior to November. I only started them in November of last year. And it's made all the difference. All the difference is really, and even your birthday is a ritual. It's your new year. When's your birthday? What month?
May 20th.
In May.
Yeah.
Yeah. So mine's in March. I'm a Pisces. Mm-hmm. But on my ritual for my birthday, I clean out all old stuff. I get, you know, all my old clothes, go get a haircut, clean my whole house down. I have all my friends in because I think how you spend your birthday is how your whole year is going to go. So this year I made a whole bunch of butter chicken, basmati rice. Mm. I had in old friends, new friends, condo mates, and my family. And they all came in, my house was full. And we just laughed and talked. And I said, that's how I want my year to be, filled with connection and belonging and treating people and nurturing and all of that. So even your birthday is a ritual. It cleans everything up for your new year.
Now that you've had two NDEs, do you fear death at all?
Well, I didn't used to because I wanted to go home so badly. But now I have to live to 150 and I'm going, I have a lot of catching up to do because I was living mostly a near-life experience. And so, yeah, I don't fear it. I want it to be nice and lovely and peaceful where I can just go up.
Since you've been on the other side, if you compare it to this one, which would be the dream and which would be more real?
Yes. I think they're both real. What I do is, I remember I was talking earlier about how you roam around, you have mm-hmm. all these things in there. Do you do that?
No.
You don't do that?
I'm not able to get out of my body, at least that I know of.
Oh, yeah. I was talking to a woman today she said, I saw that podcast. She said, I do the same thing. I have a whole life that I live outside of this physical. And I said, well, it's time now to write down what that life is and make it real here. And I used to do that with students in my classroom. When their eyes went kind of dead, you could see the dead eyes because that means their spirit's not in. And I remember going over my first time I ever did this, and I pulled my chair over and I said, where do you go when you get sick of us? He said, well, I build it. And it was the first time his eyes actually sparked with light. And he said, oh, I build skateboard parks. Really? And I got this notepad out and I said, you build skateboard parks? And then I said, do you ever get visions? Do you ever see what it is? Do you get formulas? Yeah, sometimes I do. Write them all down. Who knows? Maybe you're destined to be making the best skateboard park. And I said, are you taking all the courses? So that you can build, like, are you doing drafting, physics, all those math and all those courses? No. So we redid his timetable because his vision of building skateboard parks was more real than him sitting in a classroom.
Basically, the soul dominance is about your purpose, right? Let's say if that is the weakest for somebody, how do they discover their purpose?
Well, some people want transformational purpose and they want it today. But we can start with our purpose on very simple things. Being able to wake up in the morning and saying, well, today my meaning and purpose is going to be about lighting up when I see people on the sidewalk. And I'm going to say, hello, good morning. I'm going to just say hello to everybody. And just start small. And then And then say, okay, well, that worked really well. Now my purpose is going to be, maybe I want to volunteer somewhere. Or I want to help somebody out. So a purpose can be so many degrees of purpose. Soul dominant people think sometimes, you know, like, because I knew when I was 4 years old that I had to be a teacher, that sometimes, you know, sometimes it felt like a burden, Jeff. Because it felt sometimes like I was kind of trapped. Like when I see people going on vacations and they're going on some beach vacation in February, and I thought, I can't go because I'm teaching. So sometimes it felt a bit like a burden. So some people wish for a great big soul purpose, but there's always that side, you have to work really hard for it. So I'd say if you don't have a massive soul purpose, start small. Every day, give yourself a purpose and then start building that purpose into something more and more.
If you had a friend that was grieving over the loss of a loved one, what kind of advice would you give?
I've had that a few times. Well, first of all, there are a lot of things that all of us in your viewers understand, or they wouldn't be watching your show, but we know they're still here. My mother, when she passed, she loved a cup of coffee, instant decaf Nescafe cup of coffee before bed, little milk in it. I would leave out a cup of coffee for her, not every night, but some nights. And I'd leave her out a cup and I'd say, here you go, Mom. Here's a cup of coffee for you. You can come down and just sit in my living room and have a quiet cup of coffee like you used to. On her birthday, which is July 17th, I would spend the entire day doing everything she would love to do if she were alive today, that if she had a body. So I'd take her, come on, Mom, we're going off to do everything you'd love to do today. And sometimes my daughter, she likes to come too on grandma's birthday. You can still talk to them. You can just keep loving them and see if you can hear them talking, but they're still there. But at the same time, they're up having their own lives over on the other side too. So with my mom, when I'd put out a cup of coffee, I noticed she was moving a little picture I had of her. She was moving it around. One day she even put it on my desk at school. And I said, Mom, were you thanking me for your cup of coffee last night? And sometimes you're having your Thanksgiving in November, you can set a place out for them. Because they can still be there. They're still part of your family. They're still there.
Margo, after watching this podcast, people may want to reach out to you and ask you questions. Are you open to that?
Totally. Send me an email.
Send
me an email and we'll have a little chat. I love it. I love that we're building a community, Jeff, because so many people say that this is really the only space that they feel comfortable talking about their experiences.
Is your email on your website? And if so, what is your website?
My website is www.drmargotmckinnon.com. But just remember, drmargotmckinnon.com. And that's my website. And then my email is drmargotmckinnon@gmail.com. I'm so happy you're building up this community, Jeff. You're mm-hmm. doing an amazing job.
Thank you.
You bring on fascinating guests.
Thank you. Now, you have two books already published. You're working on a third one. What else do you've got going on that you want us to know about?
I run a webinar series. We're halfway through now, and it is a lot of the questions you asked me today, it's what we talk about in the webinars. And we're halfway through, although some people are joining in and saying, can you do catch-up sessions? Okay, because I really want people to have access to this. So I have webinar series where I show you what your spirit feels like in your body and how you can get your spirit to run errands for you, how you can go and get it checked, how you can get it to connect with the other side or with the people that you love. We don't really get taught that in our culture, but I show you how to do it. We do some exercises. We talk about how to find different levels of your soul purpose, how it can show up in your life. We talk about being invisible because a lot of spirit dominant people feel invisible in their life. And then we do how to deal better with toxic people and difficult people, because we want a life of unconditional love and peacefulness. But how do we do that and still remain peaceful and have to deal with difficult people? So we did that last week. And then we're building our digital vision board as our grand finale, because I found out the power of our photographs as part of our blueprints, and how your photographs can help you understand your blueprint that you're born with. So we have webinars. And then I also do Ask the Universe groups, where we pose a question to the universe every month. And then everybody asks the universe all month. They get all their answers, and then we share them in a group, which is always so fascinating to hear what the universe said to them. And then I have another group I started. It's Ask the Universe, but these people want to write a book. So they want me to show them how I got my books written by asking the universe.
Well, before we finish up, can you give us one more positive message?
There's so much to look forward to. So much to look forward to. I wouldn't have believed that 20 years ago when I came up with this, and I was in my phase of wanting to go home. I am so glad I stayed here, because there is so much out there. Once you start diving in and you take your life on as your life lessons and all the things you want to grow into, and really creating that life that your spirit wants to live, that's where the sweet spot is.
Dr. McKinnon, thank you for your message. And thank you for being my guest.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It was such a pleasure.
The pleasure was all mine.
Thanks for watching the Jeff Mara podcast. I really appreciate you. Another way to show support is through YouTube memberships. And if you do, there are loyalty badges and other perks depending on your level of membership. All you need to do is click the join button underneath the video to find out more. Thank you for your support.